Yes, you are, because you love that combination of news and entertainment. You're only going to find one place here in Cairo. It's the John Curley, Sherry Ehrlicher Show. Sherry out today, back Monday. Tom and in doing a great job. Thank you very much, my friend. Glad you put on pants to do the show. Much appreciated.
Only for you, John.
You covered a lot already, and you know what?
No one's listening! Listen!
Nope, they're all listening, and by one person's going to get a chance to play the know-it-all quiz. Teeny. Tell it, Teeny wants to. Teeny, you can't play. You work here.
Teeny. She wants to play. I don't believe this!
Hold on, we're going to check and see if you're allowed to play. Jody, you want her to play?
Hey, I hope somebody
somebody play instead of Teeny. 1-888-973-5476. Get a chance. 1-888-973. Hold on, Teeny, 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 no, we haven't. Hold on, hold on. Teeny, wait. Somebody comes in and wants to play, then if there's nobody there, then you're going to play. That's what we'll do. 1-888-973-5476. Get a chance to get on the air. One interesting thing about yourself, you find yourself winning a whole box of Bite Me cookies that Teeny is now destroying. Teeny, stop.
Ow, jeez.
Don't throw those at me.
All
right, time to get in the game. I shouldn't have said anything. Now she's all excited. All right. Please get somebody on the phone other than Teeny. Please, Joe, please.
Oh. Wow.
I hate to be when these guys get on the radio and just like, oh, these young kids today. Blah, blah, blah. But don't take it from me. Take it from the CEO of NVIDIA. This is the stock that you should have bought probably, I don't know, 9-10 months ago.
Yeah, thanks 2020 hindsight.
Could have quit your job. The guy's running the whole AI thing. And he goes and gives a speech over at he also, I've seen him on Instagram and YouTube. He's like, look, if you are signing up to be a, you're going to be a programmer, you're doing that, don't do that. Don't. You're going to forget it. That job's gone. He's listing all these jobs that are going to be going away because of AI. He's on the forefront of it. So he goes to speak to a bunch of kids at Stanford, and he has some pretty tough. This isn't even anything that anybody can actually, I don't know how they react to this, but he says...
I think one of my great advantages is that I have very low expectations. and I mean that. Most of the Stanford graduates have very high expectations. You deserve to have high expectations because you came from a great school. You were very successful. You're at the top of your class. Obviously, you were able to pay for tuition. And then you're graduating from one of the finest institutions on the planet. You're surrounded by other kids that are just incredible. You naturally have very high expectations. People with very high expectations have very low resilience. And unfortunately, resilience matters in success.
Wow. How do you make that turn? So people that have high expectations have low resilience?
Yeah, interesting connection here.
I want to see the data on that one, yeah. Anyway...
But he goes on, and what he says about suffering is provocative.
Hold on. I got more of them. Here he goes.
I don't know how to teach it to you except for I hope suffering happens to you. And I was fortunate that I grew up with my parents providing a condition for us to be successful on the one hand, but there were plenty of opportunities for setbacks and suffering. And to this day, I use the phrase pain and suffering inside our company with great glee. And I mean that. Boy, this is going to cause a lot of pain and suffering. And I mean that in a happy way, because you want to refine the character of your company. You want greatness out of them. And greatness is not intelligence. Greatness comes from character, and character is informed out of smart people. It's formed out of people who suffered. And so that's it. And so if I could wish upon you, I don't know how to do it. For all of you Stanford students, I wish upon you ample doses of pain and suffering.
Wow. John, I know he's being intentionally provocative for effect, but I actually believe he's making a very salient point. At this time in my life, I relate a lot of things to parenting. I'm in parent mode at all times. So I have a 13, 10, and 7-year-old. My 10-year-old is sports crazy right now. And I'm just going to use this as an analogy and to lay down the principle. But he was on a basketball team that won nearly every game during the regular season. I might have been the only parent there that was hoping for a loss, was saying these kids need to lose. Because the dynamic that I saw taking shape when these 10-year-old boys were winning every single game was they were getting conceited. They were getting overconfident. They were getting flashy. They were getting deceived by their own perceived greatness on the court. So lo and behold, they make it to the championship game and they get annihilated by like 13 and 15 points. And it's clear by about halftime that they're going to lose. They're facing the first real sign of adversity the whole season long. And what? Lo and behold, what do they start doing? They start jawing with the refs. They start getting down. They start getting down on each other. They start getting frustrated and pouty. And I went, yes, it's finally happening. And it was revealing itself, the true character that was on their hearts that was not revealing itself when everything was going splendidly for them. The second they started to experience that hardship, all of a sudden they were unmasked. And so I was able to then correct behavior. And I was able to go, hey, you don't talk to the refs. Or I said, hey, you guys got to pick each other up. But they would have never learned these tough lessons had they continued to see such great success. I think that analogy and or that metaphor applies to even bigger things in life as well. I think byproducts of pain and suffering, if done well, are resilience, gaining perspective, empathy, courage, on and on the list goes. Contrary to popular opinion of the day, the object of life is not to avoid any and all pain and suffering, because that could never be fully accomplished. If you remove those things, then you also have to remove love from the equation. That gets us into a philosophical discussion. And I'll just end my point on a C.S. Lewis quote who said, "Try to exclude the possibility of suffering, which the order of nature and the existence of free wills involve, and you find that you have excluded life itself." I think that's what the NVIDIA CEO is saying here rather explicitly and brazenly. And it sounds so provocative to modern ears because that's just not the way we think in this day and age.
I saw a compelling study. Reason.com had the person on that had done it, and they were talking about because every generation, those guys are weak, right? The greatest generation of our time, and they kept going. And this person said, well, I actually had the data to prove that is not just something people jaw about, oh, you guys don't know how hard we had, uphill both ways in the snow, that thing, walking to school. And she said what had happened was that when you started putting bicycle helmets, not that there's anything wrong with bicycle helmets, but bicycle helmets and knee pads, when the parents tried to create an incredibly safe environment for their child, that then went from the physical manifestation of the bike helmet and the knee pads and the pads, or don't let them ride the bike because they'll hurt themselves, don't let them swim because they'll drown, or whatever the other things they try to protect them from. That then they took that from riding the bike out near the driveway or near the house to then into the schools and then safe spaces where you would not be hurt or you'd be triggered by something, that the bubble wrapping of these kids as a result of sort of the cultural phenomenon of all the parents wanting to create safe spaces for these kids. And then it continued into college, and then, trigger warnings that I'm going to say a word that might upset you. When you find out that Donald Trump won, there'll be a special room where you can go in. There's going to be bubbles and puppies and coloring books. And we want to save, and we want, then you have hate speech. It really is no such thing as that, but it's to stop you from feeling emotions that make you feel bad. And at the same time that was happening, there was also the elevation of the victim to the point of majesty. And then it was just a series of like, who is victimized more? And you were given no credit for getting up. You were only getting credit for laying around and crying and showing your wounds, whether real or imagined. And if you had been hurt to a greater extent than the person next to you, you got more victim status. And those were like tokens that could be cashed in on social media. So you create a child that is looking for safety, and then a child that is highly sensitive and highly alerted to what could harm them. And then the slightest harm causes the victim, and then the victim rises to the top and then gets a lot of sympathy. Not for anything you've done, but for a perceived offense to your character, to your person, to whatever it is that you think you are in the world. So you combine those two things together, and then you end up having very, very hypersensitive people. And I don't think we will do well as a society when we have people that are always looking to be victimized or looking to have somebody offend them in some way, so that then they don't get up from it. You know, I don't know who said it. Trent Locke did once from Mississippi. He said there's no education in the second kick of the mule. And because the first kick teaches you everything. Oh, my. Oh, wow. That hurt. Right. There's no education in the second kick. You should learn from it. You should learn from falling off the bike. You should learn from losing. There's always greater lessons to be learned in a loss than there is in a victory. I'm glad those kids lost. And I'm disgusted by the fact that they would give the refs a hard time. If I was that coach, every single kid that looked at that ref sideways, they would be out. They would be in the locker room. They'd be in their clothes, and they would have to sit in the stands with other people that don't know how to play properly or lose properly or just respect somebody in a authority. Here's another one that sort of fit in there with this. Another guy talking is something I saw on Instagram. I said it's Joe.
I've often said the difference between people who win and people who whine is very simple. People who whine want to feel good before they do something, and people who win do something so they can feel good.
That's simple truth. I don't think that's C.S. Lewis, but
I understand exactly what he's talking about. My mind has shifted on this dramatically the older I've gotten. It's not whether you win or lose, it's how you play the game. And I know that's a cliche, but it's absolutely true. If you're looking at the win in order to fill yourself up, you've already lost. Okay, right? You need to have a character that is strong enough to endure the tides, you know, the ebbs and flows of life. And growing up, it used to be all about the winning. What's the point? I mean, that's the objective of this whole exercise. And then I began to realize, no, it's who you are amidst the ups and downs. Like the people I've found the most respect for in life are the ones with the most integrity. Integrity comes from the word integer, which means wholeness. And wholeness infers that you are the same no matter which way the wind blows. If things are going great for you and your essence is leading to great flourishing in life and you're being rewarded for it, great, you're the same person. If what you say and what you do leads to great disadvantages in your life, you're the same person no matter what. In other words, does that sort of make sense? I know that was a bit of a word salad, but it just speaks to the fact that your character is strong enough to where you can handle the highs and lows. You can handle the winning and losing. That's not the point. It's the person you are and who you've become that matters the most, not the wins and losses.
Right. No matter what is happening to you, you're steady like a boat.
Yes.
Like catching the wind and moving forward.
And the cultural winds blow every which way, and there'll be seasons where you're rewarded for who you are, and there'll be seasons where it'll be just the opposite. And what's important is to maintain who you are.
I saw Marlon Brando interviewed once. Connie Chung was interviewing him and asked him, people say you're the greatest actor of all time, you're the greatest actor in America. And Marlon Brando, weighing, I think, like 400 pounds, sitting in this chair, says, why is that important? Why do you ask? And then he goes on to say, that's the problem with America. He said, people are always looking for the best.
Yes.
Who's number one at something?
Yes.
Right? And why is that necessary that we do that? Why do we have to rank everyone's accomplishments by who's on top, who's number one, who's number two or number three, and who are the other people that just striving for that one spot, right, leaves everybody behind? And then somehow the guy at the very top gets something out of it. But why is it always necessary to rank everything? It's fun game.
It's kind of the American way. In one sense, it's unique to the American way. The rest of the world, different countries don't necessarily believe that way. But America is always about who's number one, who's got the top ratings, who's got the top prize, and we say that is a virtue in itself, winning or being the best at something. And I wish we could sort of, as my wife would say, flip the script or change the narrative. Mm-hmm. And for example, if you're coaching little kids in baseball this spring, which I've done in the past, instead of saying, here's everything we need to do to win, say, here's everything we need to do in order to win the game of life while we're playing this game. Kindness to the other team, respect for the umpires, playing with integrity, not complaining, going out and working hard and getting better at your skill and your craft rather than, all right, if we do this, we're going to win the championship. And right. I think far too many coaches are saying that instead.
Right. To find the joy in the moment of the pass, of the basket you've made, or a defense that you played, but in that, but it's in the playing of the game that the score is not as important.
Yes.
You know, when my kids were little, they played in this soccer thing, and they're like, oh, yeah, we don't keep score because we find that damages their self-esteem.
No, you should keep score.
And I hated that because, like you guys aren't, but believe me, those kids right now are keeping score. They know the score.
Yeah.
They know what the score is.
That's a part that's of the game.
That's fun and competitive. That's part of the game, but you're right.
Well, because it can teach you how to lose. Anyways, we could go on and on forever. I love this subject.
When I coached football, I said to those parents, I said, these guys are going to get a master's class in losing. Believe me. They're all going to graduate with great degrees in losing because we are not going to win many games.
Made them better people.
I don't know about that.
You know about that?
Okay. Here we go. It is Friday. Time for the Know It All quiz. It's brought to you by Bite Me Cookies, official cookie of the John Curley, Sherry Elliger show. Yes, it actually is a cookie called the Bite Me Cookies. What I would do first, I'd have Wilcox Family Farm eggs. A snack. Power packed with protein. Hard-boiled egg with a little bit of salt on it from Wilcox Family Farm Eggs. That's the way to go. And then it's just some cookies, Bite Me Cookies. Yeah, that's right. Sherry loves them. All right. Teeny, you can't play. We got somebody. So no
Teeny's not left.
No, it's not a disaster.
I don't believe this.
All right, fine. Believe it all you want. I don't care. All right, let's meet our contestant now. Sorry, sometimes I just lose my patience with her. Oh, boy. Her name is Jessie. She lives in Auburn. And the one interesting thing about her was she was once used as B-roll on a Cairo 7 News back in the 70s. You might remember. Say hello to Jessie. Hi, Jessie.
Hello.
Greg Tomlin's filling in for Sherry. Say hi to Greg over there.
Hi, Greg.
Hi. Now, are you ready?
Oh, she's, by the way, before we just dive into this, I want to find out. So B-roll, by the way, is, so the story goes, the way it goes is A-roll is the person's talking, they go to the cuts of the, you know, fires. Well, we think the fire started about 20 minutes ago. We got some people that are still making their way out of the house. They cut to the B-roll, the people making their way out. That's the B-roll. The B-roll is like the, not the person on camera, but the additional, you know, footage.
So yep.
What were you in the 70s? And will I remember that story?
I was on my dad's shoulders. We went to the Woodland Park Zoo to see the new ape exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
And I had this dress that I absolutely loved. I don't know how old I was. I was probably like 3 or 4. But it was white and it had all these really brightly colored, like jewel toned ribbons, satin ribbons stitched horizontally around this big poofy skirt.
That was on my dad's shoulder.
I'm a quilter. It's about the color and the fabric.
Yes.
that was on my dad's shoulders, and I remember watching that. Oh man, everybody, call Grandma and call Aunt Sue and call the neighbors. It's going to be on the news tonight. Oh, it was epic. It was fantastic.
And there you were.
Was on it my more dad's exciting? Shoulders. And it was just like from the back.
Yeah. Oh, just in the back. How was the monkey or the ape or the gorilla? Was that?
You know what?
Worth it?
I don't even remember. I know that I don't even go to the Woodland Park Zoo anymore. But I remember that I went there all the time with my dad.
Oh yeah.
And that makes it worth it. So.
Yeah, dad rides on shoulders are the best, aren't they?
Heck yes, they are.
especially if he pick you up in front and there's that moment where he has to make the transfer from the front back over his head and then onto his shoulders. You're like, whoa! You kind of swoop you out over top. And then would he hold you by the ankles or would he get you around the knees? What was the traditional hold there on the shoulders?
No, just right around the hips and up over the head. He was a Marine. Yep. It was easy peasy.
That's good. Oh, well, that's a great memory to still keep. Well, listen, the tone and tenor of what we established is a friendship. And, you know, friendship is so shallow nowadays. But this being a friendship, it now changes with a minor chord, and we begin.
Oh.
Know-it-all quiz. These are hot off the press. I've been writing them for the last 20 minutes. Here we go.
I'm scared.
Oh, come on. Everybody's going to win here.
No need to worry.
Yes. Number one. Greg, you're going to read A, B, and C. Ready? What does Greg say was the most difficult thing about the COVID lockdown?
Is it A, not being able to visit my grandparents and hold the hand of my beloved grandmother as she slowly passed away? Yeah, the word slowly? Whoa. Or B, unable to attend the church that helped me practice my faith and live as JC would want me to? Or C, I was forced to wear sweatpants.
I'm going to say C. And yes. Are those yellow medium-sized I Beat John Curly t-shirts still available?
Oh, it goes right to the reward.
Ah. Right to the reward.
Wow, it's not missing words here.
Yes. You want one more? Yeah, you'll get one of those.
I totally do.
Okay, all right.
Where's my prize?
Joe's right that day. Joe's not even won yet. Wow. Moving on to number two. Do send her one, Joe. They're under my desk. We were going to experience some spring-like weather for the next couple of days, but everyone is thinking about when it will end. And according to my fill-in co-host, why is that, Greg?
Is it A, it has something to do with Tocqueville? B, people want the colder weather so it doesn't look weird when you wear sweatpants in public? Or C, curious antelopes get eaten at watering holes?
I'm going to say B. I don't know the answer, but I'm going to say B.
Yeah, B's good, too. We'll go to the sweatpants theme. Sure, why not? Teeny, don't do that. She's breaking up all the cookies. All right, number three.
Potato.
There we go. She's back. We found out today that Boeing airplane that suddenly lost altitude, caused some physical injuries to passengers, was the result of a flight attendant doing what, Greg?
Is it A, trying to join the Mile High Club with the captain of the plane? Or B, accidentally pushing a button that pushed the seat of the pilot forward, causing the pilot to accidentally push the yoke of the plane forward? Or C, the flight attendant was upset that no one paid attention to her pre-flight instructions. She went into the cockpit and forced the plane to dive suddenly because no one was listening to her.
I so want to say C. I'm going to say B. I don't know the answer, but B sounds like the most legit answer.
Yeah, it is legit. Let me ask you this.
Gotta trust your gut.
No one's listening!
You're listening!
That's what she said. That would be me.
Do you not listen? Don't you listen?
I do, but hey, my retirement career is working retail, so I work weird hours, and I'm just happy to have today off.
Oh, okay. But like when you're on a flight, you're on the plane, and they're going through the whole thing. Do you look at them? You at least look at something else. You're not paying attention.
Yes.
Ish.
That's enough. All right. I don't like the flight attendants that get too cutesy with it to get your attention. Like, look.
This isn't about you right now.
My bad. Jeez.
Jessie's got a chance to, you know, she's still living off the 70s where she was in B-roll from the back. Right? All right. In a beautiful dress.
Right? It sustained her for 5 decades.
Here we go. Today, I was upset and I put up trail cameras on my property. What am I hoping to catch, Greg?
Is it A, wildlife doing dirty wildlife things? B, John just wants to keep an eye on his dogs? Or C, we're not at liberty to say, but stay tuned in a couple of weeks. We'll be able to talk about it.
C sounds interesting.
Shoot.
Dang
it. Okay, I'm
going to
say B.
No. C! No way. Dragging you across the finish line.
Oh. Wow, that's all right. That's all right. Yellow t-shirt.
Yellow? They're not yellow. They do. John Stauffer, the cat named John Stauffer, did get in the big bucket and urinate on them long, long time ago. So I'm sure whatever is there, it's not going to be that. It's going to come out in the wash. You're going to be fine. We're going to do a medium IV John Curley t-shirt plus a whole box. Teeny. There you go. All the cookies coming your way. All right. Well, listen, you enjoy the spring-like temperatures, but don't forget, winter is still right around the corner, so you can make sure you can quilt something big, thick, warm, and cozy. Okay?
That's right.
All right. You got anything you're working on right now?
I do, actually. I'm basting a quilt here. I took a break to talk to y'all.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll let you get back to it. Let's get back to the quilting and enjoy retail. Boy, nothing strengthens the soul and the character of a human being having to deal with retail. So we're glad you're
Amen.
In there doing it.
Amen.
Yeah, amen to that, baby. Here we go. Greg Tomlin, I must say, you are a delight.
I've had an absolute blast. Thank you, John. Such an honor, and great to work with the A-team here at the studio.
I'm not saying that's for you to say anything else.
Sorry.
Just that you are a very, very, very smart man, and you have a wonderful way of articulating the news in a relatable way. So, well done.
Incredibly thoughtful.
Thank you very much.
Appreciate it, guys.
Yes. Yeah. You make Joe sort of sit up and think, oh, that's interesting.
It's true.
That's hard to do to make Joe sit up and take
notes. By the way, and Andrew has made it through two whole days without one bit of flatulation, which is, I think, it's commendable. So
they've been subtle.
I don't know if that's true.
Very silly. Should we just give Andrew a little love?
There it is.
There you go. All right, we'll get to the other day, but first let's take care of the mailman coming by. Here comes that mailman now. Oh, boy. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
I'm the mailman. As you can see, I'm the mailman. Don't nobody mess with me. I'm the mailman.
Wrong!
If you didn't know, I'm the mailman. I bring the mail to your door.
I'm the mailman. I'm the mailman.
Is that me from yesterday?
That's wrong! Yes, that was you. That's an actual mailman that wrote that song. He lives in Elgin, Illinois, and he performed that song like 12 years ago or something at the U.S. Postal Service conference in front of like tens of thousands of mailmen or 5,000 mailmen, and they went nuts. And I found it online like 12 years ago or 15 years ago, and we then flew him in when Tom and I did the show live at the Triple Door.
No way.
It was a surprise to everybody, and he walked down the aisle. And people couldn't believe it.
That's
he
incredible.
He sang the song live. He said to me, he goes, I'm just a mailman. I live in like Elgin, Illinois. I can't believe people are cheering for me. I said, oh, my God, you are a big part of this show, Mr. Mailman. All right, we get a load of the day, but first take care of all the rest. Here we go.
Off topic, Bubba in the 360 on my intro song. Depending on the card table you are at, you still need to, quote, know when to run, end quote.
True.
I was only ever backroomed once in Las Vegas for card counting. It was a place called the Imperial Palace. Maybe one day I will tell the tale on this show.
How many are you banned from?
Oh,
I'm banned from quite a few, at least a dozen.
That's wild.
But that was my only ever backroom experience, where I was in a small room for about 2 hours being interrogated. Good times. I should have run. And that's all I have to say about that.
Running. I can't imagine you moving briskly. Oh, excuse me. You're a large man.
You saved the fat joke till the last
segment. I said a fat joke. That's
I can't imagine you running
around the room.
All right.
He'll be back on Monday, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Hee-haw, Aaron. I believe Greg is the only host who hasn't given a good hee-haw for the books. So what do you say, Greg? You know what? You don't have to do this.
I don't understand the reference.
See, okay, we'll move on.
Okay.
We're going to keep Aaron
Barbara
waiting.
In the 425 says, John, I just caught one of Teenaway pack wolves on our trail camera. Big guy, note to self, the dogs will be holding it in until morning. Enjoy your weekend. Don't break anything you'll need later.
Ooh, that's so true. Scott the Snot in Faircrest. I was wondering if I could possibly get the number of your dealer, because whatever you guys have been smoking today, I need to get some of that.
They're all high.
We don't have this. Yeah, we don't have that sponsor on the airways right now.
Yet.
Wait. Do we sound high?
I'm high on life every day.
They're all high.
All right.
Hold on. Yes. I want to give a shout out first before we do the letter of the day.
It's time for the letter of the day.
Lots of love for Ted on the text line. I just want to get that out there.
It's true.
Love you, Ted.
Thank you, meteorologist Ted. There you go. All right. Letter of the day.
From the 206.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
I really, in all caps, appreciated your conversation about hardship and suffering, building character. It's so hard to articulate this to kids, but it's so important. And almost all the adults I know need to be reminded of this as well. How you win tells something of your character, but how you lose tells it all.
Mm.
It's fun.
Are you really back on Monday?
That's all she wrote.
Said that like it was a negative. You know, America is like a dialect that's all based on tone of voice.
Right.
You can go, you're really back on Monday.
Hey, you're back on Monday.
Instead of you're really back on Monday.